The shift toward automation is about to create a tsunami of unemployment, not in the distant future, but now, according to our next guest. Major technological advances are already destabilizing our society, and these changes are set to accelerate in the next several years. One recent estimate from the McKinsey Global Institute predicts that up to 45 million American workers will lose their jobs by 2030, jobs that won't be replaced. In a future marked by restlessness and chronic unemployment, what will happen to American society? Entrepreneur and founder of Venture for America, Andrew Yang, has written a new book, The War on Normal People: The Truth About America's Disappearing Jobs and Why Universal Basic Income is Our Future. In the book, he paints a dire portrait of the American economy. Rapidly advancing technologies like artificial intelligence, robotics, and automation software are making millions of Americans' livelihoods irrelevant. The future looks dire, but Yang says it is avoidable. So avoidable, he's decided not only to write a book, but to run for president of the United States. It is a great pleasure to welcome Andrew Yang to the roundtable this morning. Andrew, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
The CEO, co-founder, and executive of a number of technology and education companies, founder of Venture for America. How does this book ultimately tie into your work as a whole?
Well, I spent the last 6.5 years working with hundreds of entrepreneurs in Detroit, Cleveland, St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Birmingham, and other cities around the country. And it became clear to me that automation has already eliminated millions of jobs in these regions and communities. And my friends in Silicon Valley know it's about to do the same thing to workers in retail, truck driving, call centers, fast food, and the other most common jobs in the economy. And so I had a front row seat to this automation in my role as the founder and CEO of Venture for America, which I started in 2011.
So let us begin with a definition, and that is the definition of normal people.
Well, normal people is the average American. And so the average American right now is working in one of five industries, retail and sales, clerical and administrative work, food service or food prep, transportation, which is truck driving most often, and manufacturing. The average American has a bit less than an associate's degree. Maybe they attended college for 1 year and graduated from high school. They're living in a place like Ohio or Maine, which are the median states. And so the purpose of the book was to outline the current situation of the average American and then what's happening to us, to them, because of advancing technologies.
So with those advancing technologies, whether it be automation software or artificial intelligence or robotics, the future can look quite dire. You say in the book that you imagine a different future. What is entailed in that future that you see?
Well, I'm running for president as a Democrat in 2020 on a platform of the Freedom Dividend, which is a form of universal basic income where every American adult gets $1,000 a month. And my goal is to evolve our current system of capitalism to this next stage, which I think is necessary because of advancing technologies. So this new stage of capitalism I call human-centered capitalism or human capitalism has different measurements than GDP and stock market prices, which continue to go up even as more and more Americans get displaced, lose their jobs, and are pushed into economic oblivion. So that is the vision that I would propose. But as you know, having read the book, the first two-thirds of the book detail what's happening in our economy and why big changes are necessary, because more and more Americans are going to find their value, that their labor has less and less value over time.
You're running, and you talk about this in the book, which is, as I said in the subtitle, Why Universal Basic Income is Our Future. You say in your campaign, let's put humanity first. It's time for universal basic income. How difficult, what are the challenges of enacting that quickly, fairly, and dependably across this country?
Well, what's great is And my friend Andy Stern, who used to run the largest labor union in the country, the SEIU, says that the government is not great at many things, but it is great at sending large numbers of checks to large numbers of people promptly and reliably. What's great is that universal basic income simply requires an act of Congress. It passed the House of Representatives in 1971 under President Nixon before stalling in the Senate because Democrats wanted the higher income threshold. But if I'm president and we have a Democratic Congress, we can make universal basic income a reality. And it's one of the few things our government is excellent at, which is distributing checks to large numbers of people.
When you decided to run, you're running as a Democrat. And so, if I may ask, are you doing this to get this issue seen, or are you doing this with the full throttled, I want to be president of the United States?
Well, I'm a parent. I've got two young children, and I have a very clear sense of where our country is going to head without dramatic change. Well, if you look at truck driving, it's the most common job in 29 states. There are 3.5 million truck drivers throughout the country, 94% male, average age 49, average education high school. And so I would ask everyone listening to this, how much longer do you think it will be before my friends in Silicon Valley succeed in automating truck driving, given that there's a pot of gold worth $168 billion per year in automating freight? They tell me it's 5 to 10 years before it's mainstream. So the question is, how can we implement universal basic income in that time period, essentially in the next 5 years? That gives us one, maybe two presidential cycles. So I'm running in order to push our society forward fast enough so that we can start valuing people intrinsically before the truckers lose their jobs, which will be catastrophic for many, many parts of the country.
You believe that a third of all American workers are at risk of permanent unemployment. The jobs in some ways, in some forms, have come back over the years. You believe that is not the case with automation.
Yes, that's right. And if you dig into the numbers, you'll see that our labor force participation rate plummeted starting in 2000 when the manufacturing workers lost their jobs. We automated away 4 million manufacturing jobs in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin between 2000 and 2015, which is why Donald Trump became president in 2016. So our labor force participation rate right now, as we're talking, is at 62.7%, which is a multi-decade low and the same levels as El Salvador and the Dominican Republic. 1 in 10 Americans works in retail, and 30% of malls are going to close over the next 4 years. So what you're going to see is you're going to see an even clearer displacement of labor than we've already had. And that's going to be something that's, again, catastrophic for many communities around the country.
You were born in our region. Your dad was an IBM guy. And so obviously that's also a really good example of what's happened to those types of jobs, right? Of the type of job that your father had.
Yes, my father worked at GE. I was born in Schenectady, New York. And you've seen that IBM had this industrial base where there was a massive facility in Poughkeepsie and other parts of upstate New York that have been really completely eliminated in terms of their employment of people. And that's been a massive problem for the communities of upstate New York. And we're going to see that continue through the economy. It's going to displace many millions of American workers, and there will not be new jobs for many of them in their region.
When you think of those experiences of growing up in upstate New York and being one of the only Asians in your local public school, being the target of racial slurs, how does that influence your work, your life's work, and ultimately this work when it comes to a universal basic income?
Well, being the only Asian kid in my neighborhood made me understand what it's like to be the underdog or the person that's ignored or marginalized. And if you think about who's being ignored or marginalized in today's economy, it is the retail workers, the truck drivers, the call center workers, the fast food workers who are going to be pushed out of their jobs in the coming months. Now, they're currently getting paid between $10 and $15 an hour, a bit more if you're a truck driver. And when they lose their jobs, everyone's going to say, hey, that's progress, even as it's affecting a greater and greater proportion of Americans. And so my perspective on knowing what it's like to be the little guy or gal, I mean, you have to reflect on who are the little guys in today's economy. And it's not the educated folks in the coasts who are working at the tech companies. It's the people whose jobs will no longer have any economic relevance.
So you've written a book on universal basic income and this war on normal people. But in your platform and what you talk about as a candidate for president, it gives me the idea that all of these things are, they overlap, right? Your idea of equal pay on combating climate change and reducing mass incarceration, dealing with the opioid crisis, the rights for LGBTQ, all of this is connected in your mind of how we treat people, going back to this very simple idea of humanity.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Where if you reflect on where we've gone as an economy and as a society, we're in a position where all of us are being asked and forced to serve the market as opposed to have the market serve us and human needs and values. And you can see it with opiates, which was a disease of rampant capitalism where a private drug company pushed opiates out to hundreds of thousands of Americans and said it was risk-free. And they did it really so they'd make a lot of money. And our government was asleep at the switch, and now we have this modern-day plague around the country, particularly in communities upstate. You can see it in the mass incarceration of people with private prisons. Again, there's a profit motive. Right now, there is something that Tim O'Reilly called the master market intelligence, where everything is now subordinate to the profit motivation of major companies. And that's what we have to take back. We have to put a stake in the heart of the master market intelligence and say we value people intrinsically. It's not all about trying to turn people into coders or some nonsense. It's about saying that humans have intrinsic worth. We can design a society that serves our needs and values, and we do not have to serve the market. We can make the market serve us.
You write in the book, and you've been talking, you talked earlier in our conversation about truck drivers and the future, their future, and how the bleakness of that future because of robotics and those jobs shrinking. I guess my question is not to, because I understand and agree with what you're saying, but there's a lot at stake in the science too here. I mean, the what we've seen and very early on about getting driverless cars, whether it be in getting something from one place to another, have we really perfected this to a point where those jobs are at great risk immediately?
Well, Waymo has had their self-driving cars go 5 million miles without an accident, something that no human could have pulled off. And they just ordered tens of thousands of vehicles to operate in Arizona. And so this stuff is very much real and on the cusp because there are so many dollars at stake. And one thing I would suggest to people is, like, some people say, oh, it's not going to be this year or next year. It's going to be 10 years from now, or it's going to be 12 years from now. And I would suggest that there are still going to be millions of people driving vehicles for a living 12 years from now. Like, it's
right.
In a way, the timeline, like, you don't need to be concerned about it happening, in the next 24 months to know that if it is an eventuality, that we are completely unprepared for what it means for our people. And that's one frustration I have is when people are like, oh, this is like 10 years away. I mean, 10 years will pass like that. It's like an eye blink in the
right
context of our society. I mean, my kids will be 15 and 12. There's no escaping the fact that this is real and it's happening. And that if we pretend to ourselves, oh, it's not happening that quickly, we're going to wake up one day and have it happening before our eyes.
So what happens to the truck drivers? Even under your plan, what happens to the truck drivers? Are they retrained? Are they reassigned? What happens to them?
Well, and that's one of the fantasies about that's being thrown around is that Americans, or really human beings, are all retrainable for new occupations. If you look at the success rates of government-sponsored retraining, according to independent studies, the success rates are between 0% and 37%. And one joke I tell is that a lot of people who are in their 40s or 50s didn't like school 20 years ago. There's no reason they're going to like it now. And so under my plan, everyone gets $1,000 a month. I would appoint a trucking transition czar who would take some of the $168 billion we're going to save from automating freight and start a fund that would then be used to help truckers transition towards new opportunities, industries, and potentially even like new regions and locations. And then I would initiate a new digital social currency that everyone can participate in regardless of skill level. So if you were a displaced truck driver, if you volunteered in the community or helped your neighbor or repaired a boiler or gave someone a ride, that you could then get this social currency that you could then use for experiences or for your needs. So we need to transition to a different type of economy as quickly as we can, because these changes are crashing down on our heads. And right now our leadership is ignoring them and paying attention to symptoms instead of the root cause.
So I'm going to ask the most fundamental and basic question that I could possibly think of right now.
Sure.
Why the hell would you want to be president? Why the hell would anybody want to be president at this point?
Well, if you make a list of the things that one can do, if you believe everything that I believe, and you believe that our economy needs to make a massive transition forward towards an economy that values people intrinsically and towards an economy that puts humanity first again, there's a very limited range of things you can do to make that happen. And so running for president becomes one of the only things that can realistically push society in that direction. And I'm very happy to say that there's a real hunger for this campaign, where it grows every day. People come and discover us and agree with the core ideas, because 70% of Americans already know that technology is going to eliminate many more jobs than it creates over the next 10 years.
But it's almost retraining. I mean, we talk about retraining, but it's also retraining the Trump voter to understand that they have a better shot with your plan than they do with a Trump plan.
Well, sure. You know, one of the real struggles in this country is that a mindset of abundance has overtaken most Americans, where 59% of Americans cannot pay an unexpected $500 bill and are living month to month and paycheck to paycheck. So asking Americans to have a mindset of abundance and optimism and positivity about the future is impossible under those circumstances. So that's one reason why universal basic income of $1,000 a month, which we can totally afford, we're the largest economy in the history of the world, we're up to $19 trillion, we're grown by $4 trillion in the last 10 years alone. But a universal basic income will be vital to allow Americans to have their heads up, have a mindset of possibility and abundance about the future. And that's really what's at stake.
The name of the book is The War on Normal People, The Truth About America's Disappearing Jobs and Why Universal Basic Income is Our Future. Andrew Yang is the author. He is also running for president of the United States. You can find out more about him and all of his work by going to yang2020.com, yang2020.com. Andrew, thank you very much for being with us. I wish you all the luck in the world, and I thank you for sharing your thoughts with us this morning.
Oh, it's great to be here, Joe. Hopefully I'll see you upstate before long.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much. Again, Andrew Yang is the author of The War on Normal People. The book is published by Hachette. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.